Welcome, welcome, welcome. Hello. Welcome to the My Empty Hands podcast. I am Reggie Darden, and I've got Ryan Demarest with me today. We're just going to chit chat and talk about some Kenpo and whatever else happens to come our way. We'll see where we go. So basically, I love to hear people's journeys, hear people's stories. So if you could go ahead and tell us about how you got involved in Kenpo, and where did that start for you?
Hi guys, hope you're doing well. My name is Ryan. Thank you for having me, Reggie. My Kenpo journey started in February of 2006 in Garden City, Michigan at Guardian Martial Arts and Fitness under Kelly and Shelby Perkins. They were third degree black belts at the time under Master Steve Stewart out of London, Ontario, Canada. And then, I started doing a little bit of the Wally J small circle jujitsu because I was incorporated into our Kenpo training. Some of the Arnis was incorporated into the Kenpo training as well. So just maybe like five or six joint locks, and then like maybe five, six, seven different Arnis drills with the sticks. And then 2010, I got promoted to my junior black belt, which meant I mastered the children's program. And then in 2012, I got my probationary black belt, which means I learned up to the green belt in the adult system. Mm-hmm. And then 2016 was my first degree black belt at the age of 14 under Kelly and Shelby Perkins. And then at that point, they started training under Professor Jason Arnold out of Canada. And he's really big in the Arnis, so he helped me with my Arnis journey. And then I ran into Master Bill Barker and Miss Teresa Lynn out of Wyandotte and Brownstown here in Michigan, and they promoted me up to blue belt in modern Arnis. And then the following year, I was promoted to my second dan in American Kenpo under Kelly and Shelby Perkins and Professor Jason Arnold. And then I started my Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu journey, and I am still a white belt in Jiu-Jitsu today.
All right. So, what attracted you to Kenpo or to that school?
Self-defense, and believe it or not, it was probably because it was a women instructor and not a big scary man, because mm-hmm. I went to a Taekwondo school before and it was very loud and like music was playing and the instructor was like, "Oh, Sergio, Kuye." I'm like, "Whoa," and I didn't really feel the vibe. And then the first time I met Mrs. Perkins, she hugged me, mm-hmm. and it was just really good. And then I didn't really want to step on the floor for my very first time. And then my dad signed up because there was a family class on Tuesdays and Thursdays right after the Little Dragon class. And so he would teach the Little Dragon class for me and with Miss Mams, Kelly Perkins, and then we would do the family class together.
Right on. So, with me, I got started. I saw the Perfect Weapon.
Nice.
Jeff Speakman. And yes, very nice. Got the ring there. So for listeners, he's got the dragon and the tiger ring.
Yes, sir.
So very, very cool. a buddy of mine, we saw that movie mm-hmm. and we're just like, "Oh, we got to do that. We got to do that. What is that?" And I remember seeing the sign that said Kenpo on it and I was like, "Okay, we're gonna have to do that." So,
fantastic film.
Got right on there. Hopefully looks like the gardeners are getting close. So hopefully they won't picked up on the mic here, but
it's basically a requirement in order to get your black belt. You have to watch Perfect Weapon and do an analysis of all the moves, right?
Well, I mean, it's kind of funny that you say that. I guess it was probably around the time that I got, it was either when I got my orange belt or was going to test for my orange belt, or when I was going to test for my purple stripe. I decided that before any test, I watch the Perfect Weapon, and
right on.
I've kept true to that as of now. A few days ago, I earned my green belt.
Congratulations on your green belt!
Thank you. And of course. I made sure that I watched the Perfect Weapon beforehand. So I think that's instrumental to my success now. And
you know, I believe, I believe I saw you with two Kali or Screamo sticks in a picture. Correct me if I'm wrong. Was that you? And were you doing form seven or what?
No, I haven't got to that yet.
For sure. Actually, me neither.
That we, in my school, you know, we're doing, you know, school pictures or whatnot.
Right on.
And yeah, I thought it would be a good picture to have the sticks there. So
agreed.
So I do have that. I actually have been toying with the idea of doing some Kali. There's online Kali program.
I was
in a Kali seminar the other week, and
right.
The instructor there, you know, was talking about the program that he's part of.
Definitely.
And, so I've been considering that, and then also in my, well, I've been wanting to get involved in the Filipino martial arts.
Right. I love Filipino martial arts. Yeah, Filipino martial arts are great.
Yeah. So it is something that I'm looking into, and also did some stick work in the previous Kenpo school that I used to be at, had a little bit of experience with it there. And then there's also at our local college here, there's a martial arts club, and they were doing some stick work there that I've kind of been. So I've had some exposure to it, but you know, there's not enough hours in the day to do everything. So
for sure, you know,
trying to get in where I can. So,
mm-hmm.
So second degree, second degree black belt. So, I'll have to kind of give credit to Mr. Brian Doucette, who does the Everyday Martial Arts podcast. I'm trying not to steal his material, but, he has, what was your first black belt test like, and you know, how did that go for you?
The junior black belt or the first dan, like the first degree?
Actually, let's go ahead and talk about both of them. Yeah.
Okay, for sure. So, as an 8-year-old boy, I learned basically up to like maybe like crushing hammer and reversing mace, you know, on the orange belt, because the kids couldn't learn 157 techniques.
Yeah.
You know, so, and then I learned up to short form 3, and I knew up to, which was really weird. We did all of the, you know, 1 sets and then the 2 sets, but the kids learned finger set 2 and stance set 2 before black belt.
Mm-hmm.
But the adults learned it later. I think they wanted the kids to, you know, learn more material in a way. And then we also did some weapon work like Yawara, Ali, Bow, Nunchucks, Tomfa, Kama, and a saber form. Because Master Steve Stewart made that. And the whole philosophy was, the instructors, we were going to treat the kids the same as the adults. We did the mile run. We sparred everyone that came in from different schools. We sparred each other. We did the self-defense techniques that we had to do on each other without, like, you know, turning away. We had to, like, literally face them and be a good uke. We had to do all the hard exercise, like a military workout with the adults. They kept us to that standard. And I puked the first day because I was drinking Gatorade, and I thought that would help, but the sugar wasn't really good for my digestive system at the time. And I was chugging it because I didn't know better. And so the second day was much better, you know, because at that point it was a lot easier, you know, because we didn't have to spar and do the weapons forms and everything like that. It was more just, okay, now we have to do the techniques and make sure you understand the principles of the art, not necessarily the whole thing, but key things like position recognition, you know, positional check, you know, what else? Economy of motion was very common for the kids as well, because they wanted us to end it if we had to fast. And then, so that was really nice. And so the second day was the extravaganza at night, because it was a 3-part thing, a Friday, Saturday, and Saturday evening. And Saturday evening was awesome, because that's when all your friends and family could come and watch. And that was the last time I've ever done a speech in front of people. And I was like, this is my mom, this is my dad, this is my grandma, blah, 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 blah. And then I was a big tippy toe walker at the time. So I was watching old film and I was doing short form three on the balls of my feet the whole time. And so I was like, oh my God, I could have failed, but it's okay. And then flash forward about, let's see, I was 14. So 6 years, 7 years later, it was my first Don. And at that point, we had to do every single thing that we've learned up to short form four. And I know not a lot of people do the short form four, short form five, because it's a tournament thing or a self-expression of the art. So all we did was the first technique, protecting fans on the right side, and then the second technique, I forgot what it's called, captured leaves or something, on the left side, and then we would alternate.
Oh, gotcha.
And then we would also have to create our own personal form, and it could not have any Kenpo techniques. We had to create our own Kenpo techniques, which was very interesting to me because I created two forms. I created one with all my favorite self-defenses from Ed Parker, American Kenpo. And then my instructor was like, I'm sorry, buddy, you have to create one with your own techniques. And I was so disappointed because I had all the angles of attack. I had kicking techniques, I had punching techniques, I had takedowns. I was trying to preview the jiu-jitsu that I was going to do in the future. And then I created one with just a lot of weird kicks because I also did ballet dancing and hip hop and all that. And it was really awesome. So that was the same deal, the Friday, Saturday, and then the second day for Saturday. But at that point, like I said, for the kids, you didn't have to do everything. But the adults, we had to do, I think, three techniques from yellow belt, three techniques from orange, and then we had advanced orange, and then we had purple, and then three from purple, and then advanced purple, and blue, advanced blue, green, advanced green. There was five techniques, and then brown to black, we had to do everything. I wasn't a big fan of the two-mans, you know, like reprimanding the bears, marriage of the rams. However, they were very integral to the art because of position, no, not position recognition, category of completion, excuse me. And so those were very interesting. I was more prepared at that time because I had two other black belt tests under my belt. And Jason Arnold, when he saw me, he signed my black belt plaque, the one over there. And he said, I don't sign many black belt certificates, but this one I was very honored to. And I said, thank you, sir. Why is that? And he said, well, you were doing judo and jiu-jitsu, and I've never seen that with Kenpo before. I saw Jeff Speakman 5.0, and that's inspired me.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's something that's come up in my other conversations, is that Kenpo works as a really good base for connecting with other arts, especially like jiu-jitsu and judo. And it just really fits well with, you know, adapting, being able to adapt to different systems. So that's definitely something that I've 100%. always enjoyed about it. And so since you mentioned the short form four and short form five, have you done any like tournaments or, you know, competed in, you know, forms, so, that sort of thing?
When I was younger, I did a few, and I liked sparring a lot. I wasn't really big into kata. And then I did like two or three because there was a requirement to do two outside tournaments. And then we had an inter-club tournament annually at our dojo where we would have our studio and then sometimes like maybe Master Barker's school to come in. And we would have a friendly in-house tournament and we would have to do at least one of those before our black belts. And I didn't do any of the forms then. I did my favorite form, short form two, every time. And I would get bronze or silver, and then sparring, I would get first place at Interclub. And then when I would travel, I wouldn't really do well in sparring. And then when I was 20 years old, I did a tournament where I did short form four and got bronze.
Okay. Very nice. Very nice.
Thank you.
And then what about competing with weapons? So you mentioned that your school seems to, they've kind of integrated a lot of the other weapons that aren't, you don't usually find in the Kenpo schools. So,
oh, definitely not.
Did you compete it with any, you know, weapons divisions or anything like that?
Yes, I did a staff form when I was younger, and I got third place. And it was interesting because you know how in other systems, green belt is fairly low? And in Kenpo, it's like an advanced rank or an intermediate rank. And so I was put with the, you know, Tang Sudo guys or the, you know, other karate guys. And they didn't score very well because they're like, this is a different type of bow form or whatever. But I liked the experience. It was fun. And then when I was 20 years old, I did a two-stick Kali form and I took bronze as well.
Oh, okay. That sounds good. So kind of going along with that, so your instructors, I take it that they trained in other styles since they, you know, integrated a lot of these weapons? Or...
Well, so their original instructor, Master Steve Stewart, I believe is a second degree black belt in Taekwondo, a black belt in Shorinryu. And that's where he got the influence for the weapons because it's kind of Kenpo themed. I might send you some videos later if I'm doing like a double stick. I'm kind of like hitting with Kenpo stuff similarly to it. And then, so my original instructor, Mrs. Perkins, has a third degree black belt in Taekwondo under Grandmaster Rose in, you know, Wayne, Michigan. And my cousins trained with them as well in their second degree black belts under Grandmaster Rose. And so that's where she incorporated lots of like high kicks for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have extensions on self-defenses. We would do like 5 or 6 kicks at the end of moves. Like we would do 5 swords and then front kick, spinning back kick, roundhouse kick.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. And then for weapons, like you said, we did 2 Yawara forms, which is little stick. We did 2 bow forms, 2 Kali forms, 1 single stick, 1 double stick, 2 nunchuck forms, 2 tomfa forms. They're both single tomfa. And then a kama form and a saber form. I really liked the saber when I was a child, and I didn't really like the weapons when I got older.
Yeah, gotcha.
Because I realized it wasn't like Kabuto, you know? It wasn't like Okinawan stuff. It was different.
Gotcha. So now, are you doing any kind of teaching or anything like that?
So I was an instructor when I was very, very young. You know, it was a requirement in order to get your black belt to be a teacher, which I thought was a little fishy because not everyone's a great teacher, but I think it helps you become a good student and a good teacher to be able to be a good student and to be a good teacher. They help each other, vice versa. And so my father was one of my instructors, so he very highly encouraged it because he was like, I'm gonna take you to class and then I'll teach your class. And then I was invited to the adult classes when I was 7 and 8 years old, brown belt, second brown, first brown, and junior black belt. So remind me, what was the question again? I can't hear you.
Sorry about that. Yeah. Just asking about, you know, if you're doing any teaching and if, you know, any aspirations
to have your
own school or
right on
thing like that.
Okay. So like I said, brown belt, junior black belt, I was teaching like the little dragons and the white through purple belt junior students. And then when I got my probationary adult black belt and I was working through the brown belt curriculum, I was like 12 years old and I was learning it very fast and I was absorbing it very fast because I was there all the time and I was teaching all the time. Like 20 hours a week, I was divided between teaching and training as a 12-year-old or 10-12-year-old, and they wouldn't promote me. So I was teaching more, and then I quit for like a year, and then I came back and I was teaching all the kids' classes, and it was like an honor to teach the kids' classes. I got the instructor patch early, you know, and then parents came up to me if they came in the door, and I would have to like tell them about the program and then have them talk to our secretary, Mrs. Bunting. So I really liked teaching when I was a teenager, you know, around 14, 15 was my heavy peak instructing in Kenpo. And now I don't formally teach at a school. I do hope to start coaching the kids at my 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu school one day. Maybe teach them some striking as well. And then I do plan on opening up my own gym one day. It may be a 10th Planet affiliate. It might be a Kenpo school with jiu-jitsu on the side.
Okay. So what drove you to get involved with jiu-jitsu?
So I watched the UFC, you know, maybe when I was 11 or 12. Whichever year GSP was the coach for The Ultimate Fighter, and Michael Johnson was on it, Bruce Leroy, Alex Carceras was on it, and I really liked that stuff, and I realized that the first guy who ever won, Hoist Gracie, is a jiu-jitsu guy, and he beat a karate guy in the second one, and I almost shed a tear. And I saw Zane Frazier in the first one, I saw Keith Hackney in the first one, and I was like, some Kenpo guys are good, and then others, not so much. And then I realized jiu-jitsu was very good because I dropped in at Kaizen Jiu-Jitsu under Sensei Ryan Ferenczi in Plymouth, Michigan. And I'd say like a 12 or 14-year-old girl, after I got my second degree black belt, I thought I was like, I could do Kenpo on the ground. Nope, she beat me up.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, and I guess dating myself or feeling an old moment, because you know, you mentioned, you know, your start with the UFC, and right. I'm just thinking about like, oh well, like I remember when, you know, the very yes. first UFC came out, and we were all, you know, itching to get it, and remember watching the first few UFCs. And jiu-jitsu was definitely a wake-up call for people about, you know, yes. about ground fighting. But we were definitely rooting for Keith Hackney, and
for sure
he did representing Kenpo.
I think Keith did a little bit of Japanese jiu-jitsu too, because he did have some neiwaza work, you know, and some throws.
Yeah, no, from my understanding, he trained in a white tiger Kenpo, and they have a lot of, they've kind of mixed with some other things, added nice. Some other things to Kenpo.
Cool.
I'm sure the internets will correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure.
I think I've heard white tiger crane, something like that.
It
sounds familiar.
Really good to see. Anytime there's Kenpo people representing, we're definitely cheering them on. So
definitely.
I remember those days. I don't follow the UFC like I used to. It's definitely kind of changed. I don't know. It's definitely its own thing now, or at least the way that I see it. But you know, it has its good points and its bad points. But,
for sure.
But yeah, the grappling and the ground fighting is something that we as Kenpo people, as martial artists, is starting to take note of, and you know, doing some integrations. A lot of schools are doing during those integrations. You know, Jeff Speakman with his Kenpo 5.0 is doing yes. a lot of grappling and groundwork, and not just adding jiu-jitsu to Kenpo, but you know, trying to re-engineer it into.
Oh yeah, he's making it a Kenpo ground system, right? Yeah. He's like doing exactly. stuff starting in the guard, and he's like hitting the groin, snapping branch, or you know, spreading branch, something like that, exactly. which is cool.
Exactly. So,
watch UFC. Sorry, excuse me.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
I watch the UFC like every weekend when it's on, and I like Dana White's Contender Series. A guy from Walled Lake, Warrior Way Martial Arts in Michigan. He's 22 years old, black belt in jiu-jitsu, which is insane. Has been doing Muay Thai since he was 13, and he just got a contract in the UFC on Tuesday.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
So I just lost my thought here.
We were talking about jiu-jitsu incorporated into Kenpo and Jeff Speakman's Kenpo system 5.0.
Gotcha. So just was thinking about my green belt test. And
right on. Tell me about your green belt test.
Yeah, it was pretty brutal. Well, you know, how tests go, but my test was about 5 hours going through.
That's intense.
Know, going through everything, all the techniques and all of, you know, just everything, you know, both the physical and the mental, doing your pledges and your terminologies. But
yes,
one of the things that stood out to me is that I had made it about halfway through coordination set two when I discovered that I was asked to do blocking set two. So that was
quite an
interesting moment. Yeah. It was quite an interesting moment. And instructor was like, I was wondering how long you were going to go before you realized. I was like, yeah, I kind of messed up there. But
I'm sure you did a good coordination set too.
I know I did. It was coming out pretty good. You know, it was a little pretty tired by that point, but still hung in there. But wondering if, you know, you had any kind of stories where maybe something didn't go quite as planned.
So one that really comes to mind was my first degree black belt extravaganza, where we had to do a 3-on-1 mass attack. And I wasn't a fan of the, you know, gauntlet style where people would go, okay, I'm gonna fight one guy and then the next guy comes in and then the next guy comes in. I had it where it was like a marriage of the Rams, and then the guy was like in front of me with like, they're pointing a finger at me and they're about to draw a gun. They're like, hey man, give me your money or something. And two other guys are holding my shoulders. And I would kick the first guy and double back fists the guys on my sides. And then my uke, who was around my age, and the other two were like in their 40s, who could take a beating. The guy around my age, he fell to the floor by accident. And I was like, oh no. And I look at him. So then I just kick the other guy. Osoto Gari trip the other dude, stomp him on the ground. And I throw the other guy with like a really weird arm bar thing. And then the panel was like, yep, sometimes that happens. And then when I was a green belt, I had very, very, you know, hard time. You know, I had difficulties with long form two and finger set two, primarily because of the 45 degree angles and the twist stances. And like I said, I was a tippy toe walker. So like I was bouncing all the time, and my father and Mr. Perkins didn't really like that. And so I was a green belt for a very, very long time. And then at my testing, I think I accidentally messed up halfway through and blanked. And I just hear my dad, don't freeze, just do something. And then I just did short form too. And then,
yeah, no, during my test, I had a few memory lapses. And you try not to, once you get to that point, you try not to, to spiral from there. And I did a little bit of spiraling, but managed to pull it back together and get my belt. So that was a relief, because there was definitely some moments where I was like, I don't know if I'm going to make it out of this test unscathed. But
when I received my brown belt after that, I got the Student of the Month certificate and patch. And that was the first time I got that since I was a blue belt, because when I got my blue belt, I was 6 years old, and 7 years old is when you can start going to the advanced class. And Mrs. Perkins was like, you're a blue belt. I can't teach you anymore. You have to go to the next class. And I was crying. And then I got the Student of the Month thing.
Excellent.
Yeah. Excellent. So then brown belt through black belt, I was there almost every day.
Gotcha. So is there anything now that you look at, like, how has your perspective changed between being a colored belt and a black belt? Is, you know, how's kind of your perspective of the art and your training and how's that changed?
In 2010 or 2011, so about a decade ago, Richard Huck Palanis came and did a seminar at my school. And he had an explicit rule, no children at all. And Mrs. Perkins really wanted at least the junior black belts to be there. She said, these junior black belts, I treat them just like my adults. They know a lot of Kenpo. Trust me, if they have a black belt on their waist, they should be here. He's like, okay, only the junior black belts, but no other kids.
Hmm.
And we did short form one for like an hour or an hour and a half. And back then, I didn't really like that. I was like, no, I want to do, you know, the backbreaker. I want to do striking serpent's head. I want to do dance of death with the takedown and the real extension. And then I learned later in life that very moment with him showing me the hidden technique with the backward elbow and making sure I look before, I did a lot better with my forms. And as an instructor, my students absorbed the knowledge better, you know, because of Huck Palanis. And he kind of inspired me to become more of a kata person. Because remember when I told you when I was younger, I was really heavy in sparring? Now I have a balance of both.
Yeah, I get you.
And I see things a lot differently as a black belt than it is a colored belt because of Huck Palanis.
Do you think there is, I mean, has that changed the way you train? How has it changed the way that you train?
When I was younger, I would do every form, like every short form, 1, 2, 3, and then long form 1, long form 2, and I didn't have to know long form 3 until I was a probationary black belt, but then I would just do those 5 forms, and then I would do every set, and then I wouldn't do those for the rest of practice. You know, if I was at home, I would just do whatever I want, like stuff in the air, combinations. I would, you know, watch fighting stuff, and then I would try to like mimic kickboxing stuff. And then when I got older, I started doing every single form when I woke up in the morning to, you know, get a little workout before school. And then as a cool down from lifting, I would do the katas at Planet Fitness. So I started doing more of that. And then I did a little bit of Taekwondo and Shotokan. So then I started adding the first forms from those arts as well. And I hope one day to learn more forms from other martial arts.
Okay. Gotcha.
Of course, I still spar. I do Muay Thai at my 10th Planet school. You know, we have a kickboxing program every single day, Monday through Friday. And okay. I'm going to get back into that soon. I took a while off, but I started that in 2019.
Okay. Good deal.
For sure.
So to kind of close in on wrapping things up here, I got a few little fun little questions that I would like to ask. So first one being, do you have a favorite technique? I know that's difficult to pick just one, so if you have, you know, maybe 2 or 3.
Do you know the extension to raking mace?
I do not. I am still a humble green belt, so.
Okay. So, you know, they have the two-hand lapel grab, and you hit them with the nose. No, hit them with an uppercut, and then hit the nose, and then compression elbow. Mm-hmm. So then I think it's claw upward knuckle to the jaw, then a front kick with your right leg, and then you step through with a chop to the neck, and then you roundhouse kick with the left leg. That one's awesome. I also like the backbreaker because it's one of my first ones that I remember that you're actually in a fighting stance versus neutral. And when you break the neck and hit the ground and snap, I thought it was so cool when I was 10 learning that. And my instructor was like, you cannot do this on somebody. When you practice, you have to go lightly. I liked leaping crane a lot with the extension where you snap the neck, do a chicken kick on their back, stomp their leg with a twist stance on, and then do a roundhouse kick.
Gotcha.
I also like the sleeper because it's like head and arm triangle.
Okay, great. Those are all great ones.
Yes, sir.
Definitely a fan of those. Great. Do you have a favorite form and or set?
So my favorite form growing up was short form 2. I did it all the time because it was the first one that you did the angles. And I really liked the wide kneels and the palm heels. That was awesome. And then form 5, when I first started working on form five, I realized it was the takedown form.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I was like, this is like judo, jujitsu, kenpo. This is the marriage for me.
Right on.
And then sets, stance set two or finger set one.
Yeah.
Growing up, finger set one.
Love finger set. Yeah. It's always fun to do, especially when you're standing in line waiting for something.
I'm getting groceries and they're like, what are you doing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do it all the time. Pretty much any time I'm standing waiting for something, I get going to finger set. So get a few looks that way. And so our final question, if there's anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, Who would you want to be able to train with, or who you wish you could train with?
So the person who is non-living, I would like to work with Ed Parker for sure, because he's the senior grandmaster of Kenpo Karate. Someone who's alive, I would love to work with Master Jamie Seabrook, one of your guests, because he's like an hour and a half from me. And he also has an online Kenpo class every Thursday for brown belts and black belts, so I was thinking of doing that. And then fictional, Johnny Lawrence from the Cobra Kai Dojo.
Yeah. Good old Eagle Fang Karate. I just love that so much. I actually
right on.
Just finished rewatching it a couple days ago. So.
Have you seen season 6, part 1?
Yeah. I just finished. I went through the whole season.
I like the whole new series. Logo.
It's been a fun ride. So. Yeah, no, just really, really enjoy what they're doing there. So.
Me too, man. I agree. It's really great.
Right on. So, before we wrap up, is there anything else that maybe you wanted to cover that we haven't covered, or anything you want to bring up?
So you've done capoeira, right?
Yes. That is
long have you been doing that for?
In November, it will be 17 years. I've been doing capoeira. So,
I really want to learn that one day.
Yeah, it's been just a really amazing art, really great people. The story is very similar to that of Kenpo, in that I saw a movie, Only the Strong, with Mark Dacascos, and saw that and said, I need to do that. Mm-hmm. And didn't actually get to start training until quite a number of years later. Once I found a place to train, it was just, you know, love it first handstand.
For sure.
And I've been doing just enjoying it. Actually, not too long ago, actually got to meet Mestre Amen, who is one of the persons featured in that movie. And he actually, it was actually a little bit more than just kind of meet. Well,
right.
It's kind of a longish story, but basically he got to help me out with a little project that I was working on. So it was really
nice.
Just really an honor to, you know, meet the celebrities,
right,
so to speak, of that world. So.
I thought of one more martial artist I'd like to train with, Remy Crisis.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, for sure, yeah. Great pick on that.
For sure, thank you.
I thank you so much for coming on and chit-chatting with me. And
Thank you.
I always love hearing about, you know, people's journeys in the wonderful world of Kenpo. And
same here.
Thank you so much for your time. Mm-hmm. And
thank you for having me.
Let you know when this is ready to go out to the world.
Alrighty, thank you guys for listening. Thank you, Reggie, for having me. Keep the Kenpo flaming burning.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.